Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guests today are Beth Lowe, Thistle Pedersen, and Lear Keith. Beth Lowe is a mother of two living in the Midwest. She's a signatory to WDI's, you'll have to tell me what that means, Declaration of Women's Sex-Based Rights, a member of the TERF Collective, and a parent who's fed up with gender ideology and is fighting back against the damage to our children. Thistle Pedersen is a singer, songwriter, and feminist newscaster living and working in Madison, Wisconsin. She's been harassed by misogynists in her city for years for expressing her woman-centered feminist views. She's a founding member of WLRN, the Women's Liberation Radio News, and she recently released a new album of original music called Spinning and Weaving. Lear Keith has been a radical feminist for 40 years. She's the author of 7 books, including The Vegetarian Myth, Food, Justice, and Sustainability, which has been called the most important ecological book of this generation. She's co-author with Derek Jensen, that's me, and Max Wilbert, A Bright Green Lies, How the Environmental Movement Lost Its Way and What We Can Do About It. She lives in Northern California with giant trees and giant dogs. She's been arrested 6 times for acts of political resistance. First off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. It's great to be here.
Thank you.
The three of you are organizing an event in Madison to show solidarity with Thistle. What's the event? Why is the solidarity necessary? What's going on? And when you're introducing it, can you also tell people how they can find out more about it?
Sure. Thistle is going to speak after me and explain what's happened to her in Madison, which is quite a story. And everything that happened to her, especially last summer, I decided that we needed to show some solidarity, that we really couldn't let one woman swing in the wind like this, because that's what these guys are doing. They're picking us off one by one. And one by one, we fall because nobody can stand alone against this kind of just sort of constant erosion of our ability to earn a living, our ability to appear in public, our ability to participate at all in civic life. And this, the level of harassment that some of us have lived with is really awful. And I don't think that the general public really understands how bad it is. We wanted to show solidarity with Thistle, and we also just wanted to fight back and say, you're not going to do this to one of us, not while the rest of us are here. So the idea is we're having, it's a full weekend of activity. The first night is, there's going to be a critical mass bike ride for feminists. There's going to be a potluck. And then we're also having a nonviolence training for the next day. And then Saturday is direct action all morning, which you're welcome to participate in as much or as little as you feel comfortable with. It includes a soapbox style speaker's corner where everybody's just going to speak in public. And then there's a carve out. There's a separate event happening at the Madison Public Library that's organized by Thistle's radio podcast group, WLRN. And that involves 4 different speakers who are going to be talking about the nature of this threat to women's rights in this gender identity movement. So from different perspectives, what's happened, how did we get here, all of that. And then we're back to the Sisters for Sisters event. In that evening, we're going to have an open mic and Thistle's going to perform some of her wonderful songs. And then Sunday all day is a conference and time for discussion and workshops and wonderful dialogue that can happen between women who are brand new to this, women who have been doing this for decades, how we're going to build this movement, all the different things that we can learn from each other. So it's a very full weekend. You can learn more about it at our website, which is Sisters for Sisters, and the 4 is the number 4. So Sisters, number 4, sisters2022.com.
So wait, can you back up a little bit and let people know generally what you're talking about? I mean, you've described the event, and you can describe the event more if you want. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I'm wondering if you can also lay a basis. Is this about women's sports? Is this about Title IX? Is this about women's right to vote? Is this what are you talking about?
Yeah, so mostly it's about the gender identity threat to women. And it starts with the threat that these men pose to even allowing women to have a concept of ourselves. Like, we're no longer allowed to even have a word that describes us. The word woman now has to include men or else you get canceled. And the real reason for this is because it's patriarchy, it's male power, and men get to have whatever they want and women have to give whatever men want. And they now want to occupy, the theoretical space called woman, and they can't. because we're already here and it's our lives and our bodies and we are called women. And it's really simple. It's adult human females. They want to make it really complicated. And there is nothing more simple in this world than sexual reproduction. There's been some form of it for 2 billion years. There's not a culture on the planet that does not recognize that there are men and there are women. We know how to see which animals are male and which are female. We know which plants are male and which are female. There's literally nothing complicated about male and female, men and women. They want to confuse this so that, you know, we all get our heads turned around. But in fact, there is nothing more simple. And they make this huge thing about, oh, the binary. It is very binary. It's literally a binary. You're one or the other. There's nothing in between. So that's it. And they want to occupy the space because, for various reasons, they think they have a right to it, and they don't. So one, the very first thing is to take back our language, to say, no, this is what a woman is. It's an adult human female, nothing more, nothing less. Given that you have this body, you can do anything you want. I like to say that because the whole idea now is that, like, I saw this one, I mean, I know it's a meme, but it actually seemed to me to really sum it up. The right-wing people say only women do the dishes. The left-wing people say anybody who does the dishes is the woman. And the feminists say everybody should do their own damn dishes. So that's it. The right-wing gets that there's men and women, but women are in a very specific kind of cage where they are there to serve men. And then on the left, you've got this other view that's, well, woman does equal the people who serve, but men are allowed to pretend to be those people too. And then the feminists say, actually, we don't want these cages anymore. We think everybody should be a responsible adult, and we all have our capacities and our talents, and whatever they are, you should be allowed to explore them and express them and, you know, learn how to be that person. And it doesn't really matter what body you have. You're allowed to want to be an engineer if you're a girl. And I just can't believe that in the year 2022, we're still having to say that, but we are. So that's what this is about. Given that over the last decade, how much progress these men have made in claiming the territory woman, right now, there are men being put in women's prisons, especially in California and Washington, and they are trying to get these bills passed all over the country. And what's happened in California is utterly horrifying. There's hundreds of men now on the waiting list, and it's not a question why. I want everyone to imagine if you were a man and you were, if you had a choice, which in California you do, you get to say, just by self-declaration, whether you're going to go to the men's prison or the women's prison. How many of those guys are going to go to the men's prison? Of course you're going to sign up to go to the women's prison. A, it's nicer. B, it's less violent. And C, if you're a predator, it's just the fox into the hen house. So there are serial sex killers. There are out-and-out murderers. There are rapists. There are, you know, convicted sex offenders of all kind that have now been put in the women's prisons in California. And the stories the women have are hellacious. This is happening right now. It's happening to women. They're being locked in tiny cells with predators. My organization is WOLF, the Women's Liberation Front, and we have filed a lawsuit against the state of California on behalf of some of these women. But the stories are just, I mean, they're just, they'll curl your hair. The one woman, the man who murdered her children has now been transferred into her prison. And I just cannot imagine anything more sadistic than that. And of course, the sports. I mean, we've all seen the headlines now of men like, you know, so-called Leah Thomas and what he's done. He's destroying every women's swim record that has ever been because he's a man. He's huge. He's like 6'2". He's just this enormous dude who he could sleep his way through these races and he'd win. You know, not just the women's. He just broke a record that's stood since 2007. I can't imagine being that woman. You know, that was your record. And this man now gets to take it. It's just the outrage of that. And I just don't know why people aren't in more of an uproar over all of this. So they're taking our sports, they're taking our prisons, they're taking our rape crisis centers. What's happening to children, especially to girls, is really horrifying. There's in California and Oregon, there are girls as young as 12 having double mastectomies, having their breasts removed. I just don't really have words for that level of misogyny. And that's the world that we live in now. So anyway, they've been very emboldened because they keep winning. And so Thistle's going to tell you next about what her situation is in Madison and why we've decided to come there. But it's one example of what happens when you stand up to these men and you don't have any solidarity. It's a tough road. All power to Thistle and maybe I should just turn it over to her from here.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Lear. I think gender identity ideology harms women and girls specifically in all these different ways, in prisons, at domestic violence shelters, in women's sports, but also in the public square. Like women who have a radical feminist analysis of gender ideology are not welcome to participate in public. In fact, we're blacklisted and canceled left and right. Even if we do things in public that are unrelated to gender identity ideology, like I'm a singer-songwriter and I do have some songs about gender, but I also have a lot of songs about nature and bike riding. And I just finished a song called My Cup Overflows, which is about gratitude. And so I was playing appropriate songs for my audience in public at the local watering hole in my neighborhood that happens to be a major music venue, the Crystal Corner Bar. And I was blacklisted from there and from all bars and coffee houses and even open mics in my area because I have publicly taken a stand. I mean, I guess if I had kept my gender critical views completely to myself and not formed WLRN, the community radio station online for women, then maybe they wouldn't have blacklisted me as a singer-songwriter. But for me, it was like these two worlds were separate. I am a singer-songwriter and that's an artistic endeavor. And it's political. I sing about the environmental movement and there's radical politics involved in my songwriting, but a lot of it is not about gender ideology. And I knew that I needed to keep it separate in the bar where I was playing, but it was definitely very difficult to keep it separate because at the same time that I was pursuing my singer-songwriter career and I got a band. The way it started was when I first moved back to Madison in 2007, I right away got a gig hosting an open mic up near the Capitol at the Mercury Lounge. At the time, it was a bar there. And I would host this open mic once a week and I met all kinds of musicians and quickly made it into the Madison music scene and formed a band. And I was organizing benefit concerts and shows because I've always been a bicycle advocate and activist and environmentalist in addition to being a singer-songwriter. And I really love community building events and variety shows where everybody gets to get up on stage and strut their stuff, whatever that is. And then like having a local foods dinner around the event and raising money for an environmentalist organization or cause. And so I spent a good 10 years in Madison from 2007 to 2017, organizing these large community building events with variety shows and playing in a band. But starting in 2012, I started having problems. And that's when I applied and was accepted to do a workshop on anarchist feminism at the Anarchist Book Fair in the Twin Cities, which is Minneapolis, St. Paul in Minnesota. And about a week before the book fair, I got a call from one of the book fair organizers and he said, "Oh, we're so excited to have you," you know, because I was in the community. I was like an accepted member of the community. Everyone knew me for organizing these big grassroots caravan bike villages. In 2008, I helped organize a ride with 35 people from the People's Networking Convention, the PNC, held in Madison. And then we rode to Minneapolis, St. Paul over 12 days, camping and biking in intentional community. So people knew me for that. So he was very friendly. He's like, "We've just found a few words in your description that are problematic and that people are perceiving to be transphobic." I was like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm sorry, let's tweak it," you know? And then I couldn't let go of the fact that women are distinct from men, you know, like I wasn't sure how to describe how I was like female bodied women, is that okay to have that in there? You know, and I kept some of my quote unquote transphobic language that really was reality based, material based, biology based language. I kept it in my workshop description. I modified it a little bit, but I didn't compromise completely. And so then they canceled it. I told a friend of mine, and he posted about my cancellation on the Facebook event page. This is back in 2012. And I was threatened with violence for the first time and swarmed by a gang of people online in this Facebook event page. And I was really taken aback by it. I complained to the organizers, and they didn't do anything about it. And basically, I was hooked. I was very curious about what this was. It was different than I'd ever seen. I had never seen anything like this in my movement, in my progressive / radical / anarchist organizing bike riding community before. I was friends with somebody that was in DGR, and I can't recall her name right now, but she introduced me to Sheila Jeffries, Unpacking Queer Politics. I read that and I wrote to Sheila Jeffries at the time she was in Australia, and I got an email back from her. I sent her my Musings on Manarchy in the Midwest zine because I wrote about my experience. Like I said, my curiosity was piqued. I couldn't be threatened with violence like that and ganged up on like that in that Facebook event page and just leave it alone. I had to poke the beast or poke the bear. And so I made the Musings on Manarchy zine in the Midwest. I sent it to Sheila Jeffries. She said, I had asked her to help me edit it. And she's like, well, this is a firsthand personal account. It's fine. It's wonderful. You know, you should just publish it. And so I did. And then I interviewed her in 2014 at the community radio station in Madison. And that's when I realized that the Twin Cities, because at first I thought Madison's going to be different than the Twin Cities. Madison's my home. I've been here for years and years. I grew up here. Everyone knows me. They embrace me. They love me. And the 2011 uprising had just happened up at the Capitol, the Act 10 protests against Scott Walker and his administration. And that was like really inspiring and was kind of like an example of the progressive history in Wisconsin. You know, Philip LaFollette, a former governor in Wisconsin, he created the Wisconsin Progressive Party. And all of these things were being hearkened back to and coming to life again in the Capitol uprising of 2011. And it was like a giant campout commune with food and people just literally like camping out in the Capitol, nonviolent, very creative. People were doing yoga in the Capitol, tap dancing, all kinds of stuff, drumming, singing. And so I was a part of that. And I had, again, I was embraced in this community. And so I just thought it would be fine to talk about gender politics, you know, and trans politics. I thought it would be okay to do that. And that's what I was trying to do through the community radio station in 2014 when I interviewed Sheila Jeffries. But what happened in 2014 is a certain contingent in the radical progressive liberal, you know, community that I was a part of here in Madison turned against me after that Sheila Jeffries interview. That was a turning point. And then in 2015, I broadcast the Mishfest documentary where I interviewed tons of lesbians and feminists and musicians who went to the last Michigan Women's Music Festival in 2015. And after that, the community radio station banned me from the premises. And now I'm not really welcome to go there. I can't volunteer there. So I'm allowed to step into the building, but I am not allowed to be a volunteer there. So that just led to more and more bans. But it's been like five steps forward and then three steps back, because there's always been a very strong contingent of supporters of me and my music in the Madison community as well. So, and there's overlap between the Crystal Corner Bar and the community radio station. people who bartend at the Crystal Corner are also major volunteers at the community radio station. Musicians who play live on the air at the community radio station have regular gigs at the Crystal Corner Bar. And so there was a woman who circulated a petition at the bar to have, after I was banned at the community radio station, to have me get a regular show there. And it worked. So that's an example of some democracy, you know, in action, grassroots organizing. She circulated it and the bar owner was like, okay, even though Thistle has been banned at the community radio station and there's all this hullabaloo about her interviewing feminists, we're going to give it a try, you know. And the underlying kind of unspoken agreement between me and the bar owner was that I would never talk about transgender politics on the mic. And so I never did, but people were curious. And so they would ask me at the bar off the mic about what had happened. And that ultimately was the reason why he said that was the reason why he canceled the show. I mean, really the reason why he canceled the show is because trans activists started swarming the bar and bombarding the bar with emails and phone calls. And even an in-person meeting I heard about with four women from my community who were on the trans side that met with the owner and convinced him that it was bad for the bar, bad for their publicity, bad for Madison. And, you know, that I was a hateful bigot, basically, and that I don't deserve to be playing a regular show at the bar. And so then he canceled the show, and that was like a domino effect. I had three other shows planned in the future after that regular show was canceled, and then those shows were canceled. And then pretty soon, I can't even play open mics. I'm banned from a neighborhood center here in Madison. I mean, it's just insane. So, and then the latest thing that's happened is that I was cited with disorderly conduct with a hate crime enhancement. And the charges were brought by the district attorney in Madison last summer because I allegedly put up a Turf Collective sticker on a media box on State Street. And so you asked, well, what is this about? It's about women's free speech. It's about women being able to express ourselves in the town square, to be participants in civic life without being harassed and shut down. That's what this is about. And so that's why the public library event is so important, because it signals to me that place signals a tradition in our country of valuing debate, the exchange of ideas, lively discussion. And then in Madison, why Madison? Well, because all of this stuff has happened to me here. And then also it's the state capital and we have a literal town square. So I'm just so excited about having TERFs come and take the town square. Because to me, that's what this is about, is specifically when you're talking about Madison, is women's free speech and our ability to analyze and express our analysis and to be able to just talk about what women in prison are suffering because of this gender identity ideology, what lesbians are suffering because of gender identity ideology, to just be able to speak about it. You can disagree, but for us to be able to have that space in public to speak about it.
You know, the whole time that both of you so far have been talking, I keep thinking of the Scold's Bridle. Before we go to Beth, Leah, do you want to do 30 seconds on the Scold's Bridle?
Yeah, it's just a really horrifying form of torture that men used to legally be allowed to inflict on their wives. You can go look on Google if you want to see it, but it's this metal contraption that basically put you weren't able to really move your mouth. You weren't able to talk or eat. And it was like this very sharp point into the tongue. So every time you moved, you would just injure yourself even more. And just to note, these similar contraptions were also used on Black people who were enslaved in the American South for the same reason, that it just utterly destroys people not to be able to talk for a month or eat, obviously. But yeah, it's just a form of torture and it's just a way to shut people up. And we're social creatures. We need to be able to talk. we need to be able to communicate. So it's like shunning, but worse, you know, because you're punished for even the desire to want to participate.
And one more comment before we go to Beth, or two more comments. One of them is that this is just the latest in a long line of ways of silencing women. I mean, for crying out loud, what's the, in one of the Gospels, the letters from Paul, he talks about how women should not speak in church. And, you know, there's just the long history of this. And then the other thing, I just want to comment about the anarchist, that it has made me laugh, not in a good way, for 15, 20 years now, that anarchists, they're one of their favorite phrases, no gods, no masters. But my experience is that the anarchist community is among the most fundamentalist and also the most prone to violence for anybody who blasphemes against any ideas that have not been run past the Anarchist Central Committee. Is the behavior of the anarchist toward you does not surprise me at all, sadly. And it's, you can either say something about that or not. I don't care. It's just that they talk a good game in terms of people are supposed to think for themselves. But I mean, I was raised Seventh-day Adventist. You know, it's a fundamentalist Christian religion. And honestly, my experience is the anarchists are more dogmatic than the fundamentalist Christians. My experience. Now what's going to happen because I said that is I'm going to get a whole bunch of death threats. I mean, it's absolutely standard. So if anybody wants to respond to that, that's fine. If nobody wants to respond to it. So Beth, how did you get involved in this struggle?
Well, although I've been a feminist my entire adult life, I don't really have a history of radical feminist activism. After college, I spent about a decade in various financial or analyst roles in corporate America. I currently stay home with my young daughter, and I have a college-aged stepdaughter. And I've been really aware of gender identity politics and just the insidiousness of gender identity and ideology for the last several years. Lear kind of touched on a lot of facets of gender ideology with respect to women, or excuse me, men and women's prisons, with sports, with rape crisis centers. And all of those things are incredibly upsetting and concerning. And there's so many facets to this. And it's sort of the groundswell of this movement and how it's wrapped its tentacles around every kind of piece of our culture and our society is concerning to me. But what's particularly concerning to me, especially as a parent, is what's happening with children. The medicalization of children is just disgusting. Lear spoke on that a little bit. What's being taught in public schools, and not even just public schools, there's this going on in private schools and some parochial schools, gender identity being taught, being woven into the curriculum at a really young age. Some of the teachers that you see, they're teaching this not just in curriculum, but kind of as part of a larger scale fabric. They're sharing information. The idea that they feel comfortable subverting parents' decisions to support a kid's gender identity, the capture of school boards, just all of this really lights my fire. And I've been very openly gender critical for a very long time, but it wasn't enough for me to sit behind my keyboard and rage post on Facebook. And I was looking for a way to get more involved. I heard about Thistle's story last year, and like so many others, I was really, really upset that the state would wield such power against a lone citizen. And so I think that there was something maybe put on by Wolf where her lawyers, Thistle's lawyers, shared the details of her case and ultimately what came to be her charges being dismissed. And on that call, Lear shared her vision for what came to be the Sisters for Sisters weekend and asked for women who wanted to get involved and wanted to help. And I saw that as a great opportunity for me. I live in the Midwest. I was looking for a place to kind of get more active, and Thistle's story was really poignant. So that's how I came to be involved with Sisters for Sisters.
You're mentioning about schools, and I want to just mention something that's happening in California right now. Literally last night, I first read about this, that there was a group of fifth grade girls went on a school trip, and for 3 nights, the adults who were sleeping in the rooms with the fifth graders were males who identify as women. And the parents were not informed. The parents found out later, and they asked the school, "Can you tell us, is this real?" And the school said, "We cannot, we are disallowed from telling you. All we can say is that they identify as women, and their pronouns are she, her, and beyond that, we will not say a word." And I'm guessing there's going to be some lawsuits about this. But that's just another level of how this is being, that just happened yesterday.
Right. Well, that's kind of my point in how educational institutions are using this to subvert parents. The fact that they can't tell you that a man is sleeping in a room with your underage girls while they are going on a school trip. That's horrific. As a parent, as any parent, you should be outraged. As a citizen, you should be outraged. That's horrible, but it does not surprise me in the least bit.
So, Leah, do you want to talk about how you got involved in this struggle?
Well, when I was 16, which was a long time ago, my mother gave me Mary Daly's book, Gynecology, the Metaethics of Radical Feminism, for my birthday. And I read that book, and there was no looking back. Pretty soon after reading Mary Daly, I found Andrea Dworkin. And then after that, I did read Jen Raymond's book, The Transsexual Empire. And that must have been 81 or 82, somewhere in there. So I was inoculated, honestly, young. I had my vaccine against this. I had no questions at all about who these men were. And then starting at that, fairly young age, going to women's events, lesbian dances, different conferences, music festivals, all that. In the 80s, there would always be one. There'd be one or two of these guys who would turn up and try to get in. And it was quite clear that they were stalkers, that they were predators, that anyone who had much to do with them had a very bad story about them, and they would be escorted off the premises. At that point, most women understood that even if they didn't have a language for it, they knew who these men were, and they would be forced to leave. And that is no longer the case, as we know. So yeah, it's just been part of my radical feminist analysis really since I got it in the beginning. So that's how I got involved. But I mean, the thing is, I don't, even at the time, even in the 80s and then maybe into the early 90s, I don't think any of us really understood how bad this was going to get. Like, I know for myself that sort of every barrier that's fallen, there's that moment where I think still very naively, the adults are going to step into the room. No one's really going to put the serial sex killer in a women's prison. Come on, folks. And then they do. It's like, oh, no one's really going to let 12-year-old girls have their breasts removed. And then they do. And so it's the sports. Like, no one's really going to let these men take these medals from girls, high school girls on the track. And then one by one, Andrea Ewer did it and nobody stopped him. So there's no adults in the room. It's us or no one. And we've got to step up to the plate.
Two things about that. One is as you know, I was a high jumper in college and I was good. I jumped 6'10" and that won my college conference championship and broke the school record, et cetera. And had I identified as a woman, I would have held the world record and I would still to this day be within like a quarter inch or a half inch of the record. And I wasn't good enough as a male to make even Division II nationals. But I was good enough to win my conference. So I was good, but had I identified as a woman, I would have held the world record. And it's extraordinary to me that even people who don't care about women, but who care about sports, it's like ESPN has been completely captured. Just yesterday, they had this terrible, terrible article about how the Thomas guy from Pennsylvania is so brave and amazing, and how it's extraordinary how she is smashing all these records. You think that's extraordinary? I mean, I was just thinking about this yesterday, that this is no shade against female high jumpers. I was a high jump coach. I had a female jumper who won the national championship for junior colleges. I have great respect for female jumpers, but our bodies are different. And a male college student high jumper jumping against females would be like jumping against junior high males, not even high school males, because the best high school males in the country could still have beaten me. But I'll say one more thing and then I'll shut up about this, that the starting height for men in college jumping events is higher than the winning height for women every single time. And it's stunning to me that all sorts of people who pretend at least to care about sports don't get this.
There's a really great website that I would recommend anybody who has questions about this. It's called Boys Versus Women. And it just goes through sport by sport, what high school boys can do versus what the world champions who are women have done. And you'll see by the time that, you know, boys are 14 or 15, they can, the most elite female athletes in the world are, you know, can't compete against them. It's just, you know, testosterone gives you that advantage. You have way bigger bones, stronger joints, bigger hearts, bigger lung capacity, so more oxygenation, better recovery time, more muscle mass. And that's just the differences between men and women. It's like not good or bad. It just is. But if you're going to have a level playing field, you can't put one class against the other because we know who's going to win. So yeah, we will not have female sports is really where this ends. There'll be nothing left for women.
And also, just I want to mention about sports that some people will be horrified by this, but I have to say that I was turned on to this by a woman that I watched some MMA, and you know, everybody's hair is on fire now. Anyway, I watched some MMA, and the men can punch so much harder than the women. It's just, yes, a woman could knock me out, but then again, I'm not an MMA fighter, and there's. You would think that with any sport that they wouldn't allow it in, it's MMA, but they have. And it's just extraordinary that, I don't know, that the with every sport. Anyway, so let's move on. Next question is, as you know, I have had my own battles with the woke, and I've been canceled more times than I can count. And one of the things I think is odd is that I always thought I was going to get canceled years and years ago because I talk about bringing down civilization. I talk about removing dams. I talk about some stuff that's pretty radical. But the thing that's gotten me canceled has been the fact that I believe that a woman equals an adult human female. And Heather was saying earlier that she's not allowed to talk about other stuff. And I've done the math on my own work, and literally 0.07% of the words that I've written for publication have been about this issue. And so I'm not allowed to talk about the murder of the planet because of 7 words out of every 10,000. It's like a total of 7,000 words out of all the words I've ever written or something, a couple essays. It's just, how did was the left always as crazy, or has it gotten worse? And how did this, there's nothing we can call it except a religion. How did this religion or a cult, and I'm talking about the larger wokeism, not just the trans issue, but the larger wokeism, how did this religion / cult take over the left? How is it, or has it always been this bad? And what's going on? Any of you three, or all of you three?
I think it has gotten dramatically worse. And I think that was one of the things that really, it was like that cold chill of horror down the back of my neck when I realized how bad it was, that these kinds of daily, very normalized kinds of threats that we were all suddenly getting, that wasn't true. You know, even a few years before, I didn't get rape threats and death threats and like really horrible kinds of sexual, whatever, you know, insults and threatening, I don't know, letters and emails and all the rest of it. Like, that didn't happen in the 80s and the 90s.
Wait, Lier. So yeah. I just want to highlight this. So you were doing anti-porn work.
Yeah, and back when I had a political, you know, when I could actually do political work.
And
yes,
and,
I mean, that was my main thing, was I did stuff about pornography and prostitution.
And so I just want to be clear. You were doing anti-porn and anti-prostitution work and still not receiving the level of rape and death threats.
This is completely deranged. It's deranged. And I think there was a year or two when, you know, we started, all of us, everybody I knew started getting this totally insane level of just really horrifying kinds of threats. And I still was thinking, this is not going to go on. Like, everybody who's on my side generally is sort of, you know, somewhere on the left. Like, we know that doing this to people is horrible. We are the people who are against this sort of thing. We know that doing violence to people is wrong. We know that threatening these sorts of things, this is horrible. This is not how you make the world that we want. Just on some basic human level, we know this is bad behavior, and it's going to stop. Like, everyone's going to see how bad this is. And whoever this fledgling movement, whoever they are, they will be slowly sort of, you know, cut from the tree. Like, we're not going to let this just take over because it's so self-evidently horrible. And of course, that never happened. And now those entire websites that are just, the entire purpose of the website is just to show the kinds of threats that women get from men who call themselves women. And they're horrible, you know, and a lot of this is done in public. All you have to do is go look at what J.K. Rowling has been through, where, you know, thousands and thousands of these kinds of threats are made to her publicly on Twitter, including, you know, they post pornography on her Twitter account where they know children are looking to look about her new book and her new, you know, the things that, you know, they're big fans. So this is, you know, a Twitter feed that's going to be investigated by a lot of kids. And they very much on purpose do this stuff. So, yeah, they would flood her Twitter feed with porn images. Like, which is absolutely deranged behavior. And still, no one will say that the obvious elephant in the room, that at the very best, the thing you can say about these men is that they're mentally ill. That's the very best thing you can say. Because then at least you could help them. But we're not even willing to say that. We have to just accept that this is normal.
We're not. And our progressive institutions, our community-based institutions are captured by this cult too. Which, I mean, I agree with Lierre. It was, there's always been harassment of women who stand up for women, but it was not this pronounced, and it wasn't trickling into all of the other movements like the environmental movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, or Black Liberation, Black Power movement as much as it is now, where I just feel like it's been this capture of our institutions. And, I think it's coming to a head though, because it is just so ridiculous. And like you said, you know, the percentage of words referring to this issue in your published writing is minuscule, and yet you're canceled because of this issue. They are thought police, and you know, you can't. It's like they make things up about you. I mean, there's a lot of defamation and libel that's involved with what they do and how they're able to get away with it. Is they make these lies, and if they're repeated enough times, then other members of your community get confused, or they may start believing the lies. You know, the tactics that they use are not activist tactics. They're tactics of intimidation and terrorism, frankly. I mean, I've been terrorized. They vandalized the community garden that I'm a coordinator of. I mean, what does community gardening have to do with transgenderism? Like, nothing. You know, I mean, I'm just out there with my neighbors planting seeds to grow a little food, and they are vandalizing it with pink and blue chalk saying that trans lives matter, just because I'm the community gardens coordinator, you know. So they have a real difficulty accepting that you may have an opinion about transgenderism that is not a part of this other sphere that you're working in. They think that if you've got the wrong opinion about transgenderism, then you're just wrong all around in every aspect of your life, you know. It's just very extremist.
Yeah, Thistle, I think that there's two things, that the extremism that Lierre and Thistle talked about, but I've always thought, where are these middle ground moderates? When is the reasonable people going to stand up? And I think that there's a few things that I've noticed. The media really portrays any question to gender ideology as anti-trans. And a lot of people just don't read past the headlines, don't do their own critical analysis. And there's a lot of partisanship and othering. It's us, it's them. And an all-in, if you don't agree with every single aspect of our political side, then you are the other side. And a lot of times, if you are bring up anything that is remotely questioning gender ideology, you are labeled a right-wing Christian bigot. And I can speak for myself, and I think most women that I work with, we're not right-wing, we are not Christian, and we're certainly not bigots. We generally come as feminists from a liberal, leftist, critical of organized religion background. And we are talking to people who come from the party that we're trying to work within. And it's just very othering. And it's disturbing to see a lack of independent analysis among a population who likes to laud themselves for being such critical thinkers.
I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that I always assumed that authoritarianism would come from the right, because that's kind of their gig. I really was caught on the back foot when I realized that this was just authoritarianism on the left. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. And I wish that I had been more prepared for this emotionally, because I wasn't. I just always assumed that we were the people who cared about, you know, the good stuff, that we cared about civil rights and human rights and, oh, you know, basic things like participation and, you know, the things that democracy depend on, like free speech and exchange of ideas and all of that. And it just turns out it wasn't true. And I'm still holding on to the leftist values I was raised with and the feminist values that I got as a young person. But I feel like the left is just, well, they say the left has left me. It's just gone. It's turned into this absolute monster. And I don't know if it's possible to get it back anytime soon.
Two things. One is that I hear so many old school lefties say that they are now politically homeless because the left has gone nuts. And the other is, when I look back at my book, Culture Make Believe, I'm really proud of the fact that I predicted that as the economy collapses, this would lead to an increase in insane behavior from the right. But something I completely swung and missed on. Well, no, I didn't even swing. I took a strike on was that if I were to rewrite the book now, I would add at least a chapter on how the same thing has happened to the left. The left has gone completely nuts too. I think I did a great job of describing the rise of a crazy right, but I did a terrible job of missing the rise of the crazy left. Anybody want to say anything about that? If not, then we're going to move on. Okay, so we're starting to run out of time, and let's go back to the event. First off, Lear, you said that there were four speakers at the event. Do you want to mention any of them or anything? And then also, yes. And also talk more about the event. Tell the listeners how they can find out more. Does this event cost? You know, do the basics.
Sure. So the library event is called Courage Calls to Courage, and it's Kara Dansky, who I think has been a guest here on your show. She's absolutely marvelous. She's a personal friend, but a lawyer on fire. She's absolutely fighting the fight for women. She's written an incredible book called The Abolition of Sex, which, if you want to understand this issue in very, very plain human terms, it's a quick read. It will tell you everything. She did a fantastic job. She's going to be one of our speakers. We also have the absolutely amazing Dominique Cristina, who is a one-of-a-kind wonder. She has been the world champion for spoken word poetry. Watching her perform is just, it's a life-changing experience. So she's going to be there.
Okay, stop. Two things. One is, I will admit publicly, I don't like poetry much, and I have made public jokes about going to poetry readings because so often they're so boring. And I have seen her and I was crying.
Yeah, everybody cries. It's just the whole audience. It's just she breaks you down and then she puts you back together. It's an amazing experience.
And one more thing about her, and it, just say you don't want to answer this if you don't want to answer it, but do you want to say the thing about Chicago with her?
Yeah, she got canceled, like the rest of us, for daring to say that women actually exist. yeah, she was supposed to be speaking at this place called the Poetry Foundation, maybe it's Chicago Poetry something. And it's Black History Month. It's February.
And she's Black.
She's Black, right? She's African American, and her she's a long lineage of civil rights fighters in her family. A very proud history. And so she was supposed to be speaking at this event. And you know, Chicago is I think it's a majority Black city. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure it is at this point. Anyway, you know, there's a lot of kids out there who really need to see her. They need to see a Black woman telling the truth about her life. And she got canceled off of this panel just for saying that women are real. And now it's literally a panel of four white men, some of whom wear dresses, but it's four white men instead of a Black woman. Could we feel some outrage now? Like, when does it kick in, people? It's just beyond me. Anyway, so she's going to be speaking. And then Jeanette Cooper, who is, wow, another real kick-ass fighter for women. She is somebody who, her daughter got caught up in this transgender nonsense, and only it's not nonsense, it's quite serious. She has not seen her daughter in 3 years. The girl was 12 and went to live with her dad, and Jeanette has no access to her at all. So it's been 3 years now. And over at the dad's house, she is, of course, allowed to take hormones and have surgeries and do whatever she's going to do to destroy her body in the service of something that can never be achieved, which is changing sex. Yet sex is immutable in mammals. It can't be done. And so we're letting 12-year-olds make decisions. There's not a 12-year-old alive who doesn't hate her body. I don't, even in the best possible culture, I don't think it would be a fun experience. Puberty is hard. Your brain does crazy things. And now here we are living in, you know, a porn-driven, really sadistic society. Of course, girls hate their bodies. And this is not an answer. It's not going to help. Anyway, she's lost contact with her daughter entirely. It's been 3 years. So it's a totally heartbreaking story. But she's very, very active, very engaged, trying to help other parents and trying to stop this medical abuse of children. It's permanent damage to their bodies. So she's going to be speaking. Thistle's going to tell her story. And I'm also going to do my talk about the whole history of this movement. So yeah, it's going to be a great event. So it's called Courage Calls to Courage. And there's an Eventbrite where you can go and find it. Just type that into Google, you'll find it. And then the rest of the weekend is called Sisters for Sisters 2022.com. And that's all the other fun stuff that we're doing around this, the activism, the bike ride, the potluck, all the conference and discussion stuff, the open mic, Thistle's performing for us. We also have a treasure hunt that's all based on J.K. Rowling. So you're going to get your turf map and you're going to have turf dust to protect you. Anyway, we've got all kinds of cute stuff like that we're doing as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun, also very serious. We could get in trouble, but we're going to fight back and everybody should come to Madison.
So just to be clear, is this event is for women only?
It is for women only. The library event is open to anyone, but the rest of the event, the part that's the Sisters for Sisters part that I'm organizing, is women only. I think it would be really great if there were men in the area who wanted to do like a men's version of this, because all this stuff could be done for pro-feminist men who are curious, who want to support women. You all could have your own event, and I think that would be really great for guys who want to do that. But so far, no one has stepped up to the plate. But that's an invitation, guys. If somebody wants to have the sort of men's auxiliary to this, I think that would be a marvelous thing.
And we've mentioned lesbians a couple times. And I know I'm not going to make this all about the men, but more recently, gay men have been coming under fire for not wanting to have sex with women.
Yeah, and it's interesting to watch some of those unroll because, of course, the gay men they're not terrorized the way that women are by men, because men are bigger and they're not really afraid of these, you know, mostly young girls who are pretending to be gay men. But these are ridiculous conversations, you know, where these young women, teenage girls, really think that they can somehow become gay men. They're straight women. They're attracted to men. Like, just be a straight woman. It's fine. But instead, they want to do this other thing. And of course, no gay men are attracted to them. They're not men. And it doesn't really matter how much testosterone they take. They're never going to be men. They're not going to have male bodies. They're certainly not going to have male organs. I mean, it's not a male body. And that's what gay men want, is the whole male experience. It's, you know, we smell different, men and women. We walk different. We talk different. We have different joints. You know, like the way we move our arms and legs is completely different. It's, if you want a man, you want a man. If you want a woman, you want a woman. These are, you know, it's really, sex is really primal. Like, you know, you're not going to change that about people. So anyway, yeah, they are absolutely going after the gay men too, and they're getting called bigots for wanting to have their own event and their own, you know, parties and their own, I don't know, I think some of them are just out and out orgies, but I don't care. Like, they're gay men. They do whatever they want. It's, as long as everybody consents, it's not up to me. But anyway, yes, these young women are trying to do the gay male shtick, and it's really not working for them because the gay men are not having it. So there's been a number of gay men who have very publicly, you know, they're on our side. So Mr. Menno in England, he's great. He's got a YouTube channel. He's very funny and very sweet and very smart. And he's pretty horrified by the whole thing. So he's been a great ally to women. And there's others, but that's, you know, he's a good one. So
we're running out of time. We have like a minute or two left. Do any of the three of you want to say any final words? Why don't each of you say your own final words to this? And let's go with Thistle first.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much for having us on your show. And I hope that women come to Madison, April 22nd through the 24th for Sisters for Sisters, the weekend, and also to Courage Calls to Courage, the WLRN Public Library event on April 23rd. So thanks again for having us on the show.
Well, thank you. So Beth.
Yes, thank you, Derek. Thanks for having us on the show. And I want to echo Thistle's sentiment and having women come out. And, you know, as I mentioned, I'm newer to activism. And so it doesn't take a lot to step out of your comfort zone, but that's needed. Women need to have the courage to come out. And that's really the theme of our weekend, is courage and calling to other women to stand up and stand in solidarity. And so if anyone's listening and is on the fence, I would really want to encourage that person to join us. So thank you.
And before we go to Lierre, the date for the event is again?
April 22nd to the 24th.
Okay. And they do need tickets.
They do. They can go to the website, and there's a lot of details about the event, but there's a tab to apply, and there's details that explain the process for applying and paying and all of that.
Okay. So Lierre, what are your final words for the day?
We need to face how bad this situation is, and then we need to face them down. So gather your courage, because we have to do it.
Well, thank you all very much for that. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guests today have been Beth Lowe, Thistle Patterson, and Lierre Keith. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.